Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 787. Let's talk about the Nerdist Community Corkboard.
All right.
What do you got, Kyle?
I got one from a fellow named Jason Keach. He made a tabletop RPG game that is built around creepypastas.
I'm listening.
So it's like Slenderman and Smile Dog, and it's crazy cheap, and it showed me a whole website that is just like places where you can either digitally or in book form order different tabletop RPGs.
What is
to play.
The domain?
Well, they have it as tinyurl.com/creepynerdist what he set up for his own promotion thing there. Yet again, more of those sweet, sweet tentacles getting up in there.
Yeah.
But I looked at the game and I'm thinking about buying it. And then I remember that I don't have the time in my life to play RPGs, but I really, really want to just read through the manual. And that's a level of nerdiness that I just have to make peace with.
Katie, what do you got?
Comedian Brandy Posey,
yeah,
who is so great.
She's the fucking best. She opened for me on my album recording.
She's so fun. She has a new album coming out called Opinion Cave. It is out February 17th.
And it's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, and the artwork is real cool. Look at that artwork.
It's a ska band album cover.
And you might know her from the Lady to Lady podcast or the Picture This show. And so definitely check it out because Brandy is so cool and she's so funny and it's going to be great.
I call her my comedy big sister. She is an amazing comedian and a quality human being. Please support her in any way that you can.
Brandy! A sailorship, Brandy. Oh, that poor Brandy. She's probably been hearing that her entire life.
What if she hadn't? And she's like, I just made that connection.
You're a fine girl.
Such a fine girl.
What a good... It's actually a terrible message of a song.
Horribly
it's
sad.
Like a bunch of drunk sailors come through and they're like, hey, someone should marry you, but not me. I'm going back out to sea.
I'm gay as the ocean is deep.
A lot of those tentacles are reaching up.
I got a good thing going with the Kraken where there's no strings attached.
Yeah, just those tentacles reach up and fuck my butt from time to time.
I love that for a minute you were like, do I say fuck my butt? And then you did, and that's why I like you, sir.
You know why, Kyle?
Why?
You should.
Yeah.
You should
let an octopus crawl in your butt. You should.
You should let an octopus crawl in your butt while a giant isopod tickles your balls with its weirdly long
God. Well, I guess I'm just going to have to sit here for a while after we finish this.
If you want nightmares for a long time, Google giant isopod.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Just...
The ocean's full of monsters.
Fucking
I love it.
2.5 feet long. It's basically just a 2.5 foot long roach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually...
aliens.
Yeah, no. Fucking aliens. Aliens of the deep. They're fucking aliens of the deep. Speaking of aliens...
Yeah?
Craig Ferguson is on
what?
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast. One of my favorite people. I adore him. He's promoting Join or Die, premiering Thursday, February 18th at 11 p.m. on the History Channel. I've done the show. It's a blast. Craig is awesome. And
he has maybe one of the best heads of hair in the business.
He is a solid Scottish.
Oh, my God.
Salt it and is... peppery, fucking thick head
just
of hair.
Looking at him the whole time we're recording, he's going like, God, I hope I have that hair.
That, hair
age.
Is saying, I'm not going anywhere.
No, he is here to stay.
That is, he should be studied.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
So that we should take Craig's blood and inject it into our skulls that we should be so lucky.
Oh, man.
That we should all have that thickness.
Tentacle fucked by octopuses high on Ferguson blood.
You should. This episode... Here is the Nerdist Podcast, number 787, with Mr. Craig Ferguson.
Is that supposed to be a Scottish accent or like
no? No, it was just a
just
regal
a little
one.
Fun. Okay.
Yeah, I don't
like a little tongue roll there just to show you mean business.
Regal. This isn't Scottish. Although I guess if you're a Scot, that's kind of an offensive.
Yeah.
That's
oh man,
that's sort of the
Braveheart's just about to bust through the door like the Kool Aid man.
Kind of that's the accent that precedes the law of prima nocta.
Yeah.
So.
Nice history poll, bro.
Thanks, bro. Thanks.
here.
Make it stop. I don't feel good. Katie, just roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Man, what have you been
doing?
Thank
you for noticing.
Yeah.
Thank you for noticing.
How are you? Yeah, I'm good. This is Tomas. I don't think you know Tomas.
How's it going?
And everybody else, I think, works for you.
They do.
Yeah, so.
Here they are.
Here they all are. Your friends.
Craig Ferguson back on the podcast.
Hooray.
So good to
Thanks everyone else for doing it, too.
You were the, you were like one of the first... I feel like almost 10 or 11 shows. I mean, like, you were in the initial...
It was early.
Because when we did the live show at Largo with Adam Savage, you were in the audience. And I was a big fan of yours. And you came backstage and you were like, I want to do this! And I'm like, there's a rigorous audition process. Can you send me tapes?
Yeah. And then I sent tapes. And you gave me notes. And that's what it was.
You took them very well. I thought, yeah. No, but it was great. And then you did the next live show we did. And then
that
we've been pals.
That's a whole industry over there now.
At Largo?
Yeah.
Oh, they're doing podcasts over Largo now?
Well, How Did This Get Made does theirs there all the time.
So I know Spontanea Nation, yeah. I think, does.
And
does
Judd Apatow, yep. Friends, is over there. And I think the next Coachella is over there.
Oh, the whole Coachella is going to be a lot. It's going to be very intimate.
Their Woodstock 3 is going to be there.
Oh, finally, we can justify their beer prices.
Yeah. Hey.
Come on.
Hey. $8 for a Guinness? Come on.
Oh, well.
That's not that
You know,
crazy.
You try buying a Planet Guinness in Ireland for $8.
You're in L.A. Like, that's not that crazy.
Yeah, they don't make it
here,
you know. It has to travel.
You know, there is also the idea that maybe you don't need to drink to have a good time, Matt.
Oh.
Guys, I understand
Matt's
what you're saying.
This
all,
is not
actually.
Really a podcast, Matt. We are very worried
for
about
the, for the two that. Times I've ever seen Matt drunk in our entire friendship.
Thanks so much, guys. This doesn't
Well,
really
but
seem
two messy. Times is,
It's
you know,
two times too many.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah,
you're
two times.
You're right.
You know, the important thing is that when you're in recovery, everyone else also has the same problem, right?
It's kind of like, it is that. You want everyone to be as sick as you. I certainly do. I notice it. But I think now I've noticed that people have different sicknesses to me.
Yeah.
I used to think that everyone was as sick as me in the same way, and they're not. Some people are just... And also, you have to remember as well, some people are just assholes. I used to always look for, like, oh, he's with that, but he's like that because of that. And I don't care.
You know, this is a very serious question. Have you had friends that you kind of notice, like, it seems like they drink pretty regularly. I kind of feel like I should say something, but it's not really my place to say something. I don't want to project my thing onto them, but right. I am worried about them. How do you approach that situation?
I leave pamphlets lying around. Also, I've been sober so long that I don't think I have any friends who drink too much.
What are you, 25 years now?
24 years. 24 years. Next week, yeah.
Wow. So, congratulations.
Thank you. Well, if I make it, you know. I mean, it's... It's been touch and go on occasion. And I don't know. I guess if somebody wants to get help, then I'm happy to, you know, help with that. But not...
It's not really our place to...
I tell you what makes me feel a little awkward is sometimes when people on Twitter and stuff say, hey, I wanna stop drinking, can I call you? And I think, is social media the place for that? I don't know. Is it?
Well, I don't know. I sort of feel like, because I get a lot of those emails from people and I try to answer all of them.
Right.
I try to answer all, give as thorough advice as I can, because I feel like these people don't have something, they don't have a support structure in their life, or they wouldn't email a dude that they see on TV. Right. So I feel like I'm going to give them as much. You know, here's what I did. Get a support structure. Get a therapist. Try AA. Don't hang out with people that drink a lot. You know, you need help. You can't do it alone. Take it a day at a time and, you know, be nice to yourself. Like, you know, that's kind of the basic advice that I
yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I think that I think I've said all of that, though, many times over. You know, I think sometimes people want a specific celebrity-endorsed recovery. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that works. I think that you have to, that recovery is outside this wonderful business we call show.
Absolutely. But I think anyone that gets someone pointed in the right direction.
You're right.
Is
you're
good.
Right. Look, it's, it doesn't hurt to help somebody
but
else.
But well, if you're going to pick a celebrity, Robert Downey Jr. seems like the choice, guy. Sorry.
I mean, he's the guy.
Sorry.
You know, he really
well,
turned it
yeah. Now, I guess.
1999, Robert Downey
Jr. Different story. Different story.
Who's this sleeping in my bed?
He might already be in your house. You could ask in 1999, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
You don't know. I did your show Join or Die, which I think premieres on the 18th, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
February 18th
yeah,
on the History yeah. Channel, which was super fun.
Thank you. You were great at it, and I knew you would be because you can talk a lot and you're smart, and that's all you need to
it's
do.
It's a panel show. It's yeah. a traditional panel
that's exactly
show.
Exactly what it is. It's nothing more than that. It just happens to be about a particular subject. That's it.
And it was a blast, and I actually felt – and I remember when we first had you on the podcast and you told this story about how – you ran into Chris Rock after you took over the Late Late Show, and he was like, "But you have to do the show. You do the show every night." And you go, "Yeah, I know." And he goes, "No, every damn night."
Every night, yeah. He didn't say damn, but you're getting the emphasis.
Yeah. And that hadn't really sunk into you yet of what that responsibility.
Well,
was
it came
be.
Back to me though later on when I'd been doing the show for years. You know, in movies, it was like the voice going every night, and it was Chris Rock's voice, and he was in the montage going every night, Craig, every night. And then, you know, other people going, "You're a failure, Craig. You're rubbish. You're a fat wee boy. You peed your pants." Guinness $8, never!
This is like being heckled by Hogwarts. Like
oh, that's what it's like in my head. You don't have that in your head? I carry around a bunch of demons in my head that are heckling me all the time.
I think I do feel that to some degree. But I also think, you know, if it hadn't started to probably fuck with you a little bit, you probably wouldn't have done things like rip up the cards or just start talking to the camera.
Yes,
like,
that's true.
I can't do monologues this way. I just need to talk like a fucking person. And I think that's, but doing that is what endeared you. To
Are
people.
You saying that adversity is the mother of invention? Because I think you might be right. I think it's true. I think that the format, first of all, you have to learn how to do the format. You have to. I thought I would be a wise ass and go in and do it. I did this with the game show as well. I went into the game show. When I started doing this game show, I thought, I'm not going to do a traditional game show. And I watched the first episodes back, and I was just like wearing jeans and a t-shirt and stuff, and I was like, well, who's in charge? You couldn't tell. There was a bunch of people moving around. They all looked the same. And I went, no, man, I need a very bright suit. I need a very bright suit so that you know who's in charge. And then you kind of realize that you can't throw out things until you know why they're there.
Sure.
So, like, the convention of a game show or the convention of late night, I kept as much as I thought was of any use, and the much that they made me keep. You know, there was a lot of, I don't want to do a monologue. No, you've got to do a monologue. Why? I said, well, you have to have that piece of you at that time every night. And I was like, why? And then they would give you reasons like, because we'll fire you if you don't. that's what it gets down to, you know.
But you're right. You have to understand structure before you can deconstruct.
Right, exactly.
And you also had, boy, I sent one pleading email to Peter LaSalle. Said, please come on the podcast. You must have the most amazing stories. And he was like, no, I will never do. I can't.
Yeah.
It's just not.
I know he's forgotten them all, so it doesn't matter. He should have done it.
I mean, how long did you do the show? Was it
10 years.
10 years?
Almost to the day, 10 years. I get very angry when I see people say 9 years. I'm like, no, it was 10.
Did the time.
I did my time. I did it all. No parole.
Did it feel like 10 years?
Towards the end, it did, yeah. I loved it. I think the heyday for me, the show, was kind of the first year of the big studio, the last year or two of the old studio, when we were in this tiny little, we used to call it the basement, but it was a tiny little old photography studio. And we were, you know, doing the things with the glove puppets and just fucking, you know, doing lip syncing songs badly to one camera. Everybody what we found in the CBS dress up box. I mean, it was great. And then the first year of the news studio was fantastic because the robot, you know, became a thing. You know, it became Josh Robert Thompson's work and the Jeff Peterson robot thing was fantastic, and that was really enjoyable. But then it just kept coming every night. And at a certain point, I felt, in all honesty, not only had I run my course in late night television, but the kind of late night television that I do doesn't really happen anymore. It's not, there's not an awful lot of that. It's a different kind of thing now. It's much more, I think, positive and broadcasty and bright, a little more daytime feel to it. And I think that's okay, but it's just not the same. I think I would get very unhappy trying to make shows like that.
Well, your show really, I mean, it was very Whovian in nature in terms, and like I could feel the Doctor Who of your show, of like, you've created this cast of characters and places that you go,
right?
And you have Secretariat and you have Jeff Peterson and you have all these little spots that you go, and it really became about the universe, and almost, it kind of almost didn't even matter who was on the show because the universe was solid.
Right. That's the idea, is you make your own world. What was interesting is when I started doing Join or Die, you know, I do a monologue at the start and people are like, oh, it's like the late night monologue. I said, well, it's me talking to a camera. How different can that be? You know, I'm introducing the show. I put it there and he said, yeah, but it looks like the late night show. Well, yeah, because it's me wearing a suit in a studio talking to a camera. I don't know how to make that different. I could try it naked, but that's not going to help anybody.
No. Upside down. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Did you try it upside down?
I've not tried it upside down
yet.
Well,
you know, I don't know. I've done work in Australia. You must have done work in Australia.
All their monologues are upside down.
You're right. And things go round the different way. In particular, sexually, you have to go round a different
It's
way.
Very tricky.
Well, that's because if you're used to ladies from the Northern Hemisphere,
right?
You know, the whole stimulation business has to be done.
There's a lot of
clockwise.
There's a whole center down there for yanks with sprained tongues.
Yep. It's
are
bad.
Just used to going
like,
one
oh,
way.
I don't know how we do. Oh, that's how they got the accent.
Oh yeah.
Really right.
Oh, I used to talk different, but now it's all like this because I just swirl my tongue.
Yeah, because of all the cunnilingus.
Throat cancer is rampant in men.
Yo, man.
Come on, man.
Do you know when you think about Michael Douglas said that? You know, he said, like, you know, I think I've got throat cancer from... I always think, you know, there's a lesson in think before you speak to a reporter and maybe run it by your wife. You know, it's like, honey, would it be all right if I said, no, baby, don't say that. Don't say you got throat cancer from Colonel, even if it's true.
Don't.
Perhaps don't bring it up. Because right now everybody's like, oh my goodness, he has throat cancer. That's awful. And now the story is about, but how did he get it? And, you know.
This is all, it's just a lot of dudes and who are, lazy in relationships, like,
right.
Sorry, babe, you know, Michael Douglas, you know, if I go down there, you know, you want to pay for this chemo?
Yeah, baby, I want to be a singer.
Don't take that dream away from me. But you can go down on me. I mean, I haven't heard anything bad about that.
No cancer, you know, there.
Yeah, Michael Douglas didn't get from sucking on D's, right, honey? Yeah. Come on, right?
Who's this guy you're doing?
I don't know. Yeah, I like him, though.
I kind of like him.
No,
I don't like him, actually. But I know that he's only fictional.
He's fictional, but he is clearly in my head somewhere.
Mm-hmm. He's in there somewhere. He's a very bad person.
You know who I think that guy is? I think he might be he's the guy I'm always afraid of being. I think he's the guy I'm always afraid of being.
Or secretly want to be.
I don't know. This conversation just got interesting. Back in your cage.
No, I tell you, I do sometimes watch Tasteless Douchebags and think, God, I wish I could get away with that in my head, you know, because I'd really love to try that, but I just couldn't.
Too much self-awareness.
Yeah, I think so, a little bit. I just, the self-hatred is already, you know, pretty high anyway. I'm swimming in it, so.
Still. You know,
No, not always. Just in front of mirrors.
It's there.
Well, that would explain all the cracked mirrors in your house.
Yeah, mirrors and pant sizes. Oh my god!
You look great, by the way.
Thanks. It's my beard.
No, I don't. I mean,
yeah, it's his beard.
Yeah, it's a beard.
Yeah. Beards are great.
You think so?
I think beards help. Yeah, I think beards help a lot. I've noticed that since growing the beard, I want to have sex all the time with me.
But then there's the mirror problem. And
yeah,
then
that's
can't.
Why they're all cracked.
I'm going to hate fuck me.
Yeah. Wow, who's that guy?
I don't
Is that
know.
The same guy?
Oh my gosh, there's a there's a whole closet.
Who hurt you? Who hurt you? What's going on?
I can't remember. Society did this.
Society.
No, heavily bullied as a kid. Heavily bullied.
Yeah, well, I think we all were. I think
you're a tall drink of water, though. Couldn't you just like not?
Yeah,
some
tall
Scottish
drinks of
lout?
Water are bullied by nasty little fat dudes with pinky rings. You know that, yeah, right? Right. You're a tall dude.
Right.
You're a tall dude. The bullies are not the big tall guys.
That's
the
true. Jonah
are...
got bullied too. Jonah's fat. Like 6'5".
Well, yeah. Jonah was also
fat dudes with low centers of gravity, pinky rings. By the way, that's a thing. If a guy, this is a tip for heterosexual women.
Okay.
If you're on the dating scene and a guy has a pinky ring and wants you to go down on him all the time,
yeah,
he hates you.
Is that really?
Yeah, yeah. That's and not just you, all women.
That's a scientific fact.
Yeah, it's proven by science.
No rings. I don't like them.
All right, there you go. I got rings, but none on my pinky.
I'm going to have to... You know, I'm getting married in August, and so I said...
I was going to talk to you about that.
Yes.
I'm very excited for you.
Well, I'm very excited to
I know
also
you,
invite
I know
you to the
something
wedding.
Is, you're not a commitment phobe.
No.
But but I think you're a cautious in relationships person. I think you're very careful. And
my
dad
was married 5 times.
Right. So that's understandable.
My mom was married twice.
Yeah.
And so I think I just... My dad was married a lot before I was born. He got married, you know, he said, well, in the 60s, you know, you didn't really date. It was like you met someone, you go, hey, you want to get married? And so it just never worked out.
Right.
And so I think I just was like, I think I should be sure about, you know.
Right.
Sure
and you very this. Wisely chose someone much wealthier than you. So you don't have that worry going on.
Craig,
in
I'm
going
to make her sign a prenup for my adorable TV money.
Well, I think that's good, though, because... It removes any kind of weird fear of your celebrity has somehow led you to.
Oh,
this
yeah,
point.
She doesn't care about any of that.
And well, that's good.
Whatever
though.
Sort of B level.
And I'm not talking about her, I'm talking about you worrying about it. I'm sure, I don't know her, but I'm sure she's fine. But you won't worry about it because you know it's meaningless.
It doesn't mean, yeah, that doesn't, there's that's not an issue and it doesn't matter. And honestly.
I'm very excited for you. Are you going to have children?
Yeah.
I think that's great.
She wants to have kids, and I didn't. This is going to sound terrible when I verbalize it, but I didn't recoil at the idea. In other words, she was like, I want to have kids. And I was like, yeah, we should do that. Like, and previously I'd always been like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure I can really be
well,
good at that.
Well, that's a perfectly natural reaction to not being sure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you say, no, that's a good idea, let's have children, and it will be great, right, until you have them. And then... And then it'll be the same as it is for everybody else. Is you won't sleep for 2 years. You'll think you want a divorce. You don't need a divorce. You need a nap. And then you get past that and you'll be fine.
Well, you know, Lydia, one of the funniest things about her, she's the sweetest person in the world, and you would never, ever, ever know about her family. If you didn't know, you wouldn't know. I don't think she gives off that air at all.
Right.
Every once in a while, she'll say something so earnestly that cracks me up because it's so indicative of that she just grew up in a different universe.
Right, right.
But this morning, she was going to do a photo shoot for Martha Stewart magazine for wedding dress.
Yes,
like
you do.
For weddings. Yeah. And, she was like, oh, you know, I got this out and it's got in the desert. I got to drive out to the desert. She was like, ah, oh, it's such a long drive. And I go, don't go. Fuck Martha Stewart. What's she ever done for you? Totally sincerely. She used to make cookies for me when I was a little girl. I'm like, all right, you know what? You know what? Just don't do that. Don't do that.
Your fiance was in prison?
Yeah.
As a little girl?
As a child, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's why she's so remarkable. That's why she's so remarkable.
It'd be funny if we have kids around the same time.
Yeah. Well, are you guys going to have them?
We're trying, yeah.
Nice.
So
So how long have you been married? Are you married?
Well, yeah,
you,
we're married. We've been married for 4 months.
See, what's interesting is that everyone here is very traditional. Get married, have children in a heterosexual relationship. You know, it's very old-fashioned idea.
It is. Well, we're both Catholic.
Yeah.
Well, we were raised.
Well, Catholicism is a very, very old idea. That I'd say is about 2,000 years old.
A little bit.
The church
yeah.
itself.
Yeah.
Wait, hang on. What?
Well, what I'm saying is that your adorable tradition of communion is basically just an ancient Egyptian libation ritual. Are you aware of that?
I also
can't help but wonder sometimes if some of the traditions of the. I also can't help but wonder if sometimes the tradition of Christmas and the birth of the Savior is like the harvest festival, the rebirth of the year, and maybe could have perhaps been borrowed from Mithraism.
Well, who's to say? It's all water under the bridge isn't it?
The water's still quite under the bridge.
And if a priest takes a liking to you and you have no dad in the picture, you should be thankful. Right.
You went too far, man. Everything was rolling along nicely, and then you had to do that, Ray Donovan.
You don't acknowledge his real name anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I just feel good about it, and it's nice to...
It's great, Chris. It's really... You deserve it. You know what? You really are. You're a good person, and you always have been straight up in show business, and that's fucking rare. So I'm very happy for you.
Well, I appreciate that.
You know, I've noticed that in my own life, you know, in the time that I've known you, I have had ups and downs professionally, as have you. And your attitude towards... me and people around you doesn't seem to alter with your career. That's a remarkable gift. Good for you.
No, I appreciate that. I just...
It's bullshit, of course. No, it's true. You're like, you're human. I don't know. Refreshing.
I've had such severe ups and downs in my career, and I think I probably was douchier when I was younger, and I think...
Everyone was douchier when they were younger. Come on.
You know, having to realize that What a scared, insecure person I was, and trying to fix that with self-medicating with alcohol without realizing it. And, you know, I'm even still learning things about the alcohol gene. I'm so curious to know if you experienced this too. Even as, like, recent discoveries of, you know, of kind of seeking out dramatic situations and kind of realizing, like, you know, I think... that might be a byproduct of the same gene. Alcohol creates a high and a low, and you know, seeking out dramatic. And the reason I think about it is because there's no drama in my relationship with Lydia, and it kind of started. It almost drove me nuts a little bit because I'm like, oh, it's so calm,
right.
And having to really take stock of that and go, oh, I think that's the thing that's trying to get some type of a rise or a rush out of something. There's no alcohol, there's no substance, there's no coffee, there's no anything.
I think
it's just trying to get that thing.
Yeah, you're addicted to the tension of your own misery. Yeah,
to
something. Right, and I think that I totally understand. I feel the same way. I think that I invest some magical power in fear and misery that it will somehow keep misfortune at bay.
Because if you're willingly, it's like a kind of an OCD thing. If you're connecting, oh, this is the penance that I will pay for.
I'll pay ahead of time.
Right.
It's almost
the prepay plan.
Right. It's like, you know, when you hear that thing, it's like, oh, you know, most of the things I worried about never happened. I think, well, okay, clearly worrying about things causes them not to happen.
Of course.
So therefore, I will worry about all the awful things that can happen in order to stop them happening.
That's right.
I understand that that's insane, but I have never claimed to be otherwise.
It's human. I think it's human because, you know, it's like we didn't ask to be born. We just appear. Mm. We just appear. Mm. And all of a sudden we have to work out the world based on the sum total of knowledge that's come in all of the creatures who are like us before.
Mm.
And, you know, not to disparage religion or anything like that, but I think human beings need to feel connected to something to try to make sense of the world. And so for some people, that's religion. For some people, it's substance. And for some of us, it's
food.
Or this false association with, this is how I can control an uncontrollable world. If I,
But they all seem to be control issues, ultimately.
Yeah, I think they are. I think otherwise you realize we're spinning out of control in a massive vortex of nothingness heading towards oblivion.
Right.
On the other hand, it might not all be bad.
It might not all be bad. Yeah. Well, it's just, it's so hard not to feel like it's all bad when all of the news is sensational. I mean, there are bad things in the world, but then on top of that, the news sensationalizes everything. And they're going to tell you the worst stuff because you're going to listen to the worst stuff because it pokes at all of your biggest fears.
Well, everything, everything. I think everything is clickbait. I mean,
of course it is.
And you, I realize this, and you must get this too. Everyone who I think who works in show business, you realize that every interaction you have, which is recorded, even this one, I'm sure someone somewhere will say, "Let's take that bit out and put it on the website," and that will go, "Oh." Like I was selling a house. I have a house in Malibu. And I was selling it. And a website put this thing out. It was like, Craig Ferguson flips out in Malibu. Now, it's because I was flipping a house in Malibu. But it was like, Craig Ferguson flips out in Malibu. So you'll click it damn to it. See me going, oh, what's your name, sugar tits?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just me selling a house, which is no longer for sale. I decided I wasn't selling it. So you that's not even true.
So in two ways, you did not flip out.
No, I didn't flip out. I was going to sell it, and I thought, no.
Yeah, because the unfortunately irresponsible part about all that is that most people will never do the research to find out what the truth actually is.
I don't think people are really interested in the truth. I think that for the most part, people are interested in the small adrenaline hit of their sense of righteousness,
yes.
Or that comes from looking at gossip or
that
or
is a
negative.
Public addiction that I believe is an epidemic. I do believe people are addicted to outrage, and I do believe people are addicted to that.
It's like a little slot machine in Vegas. It's like a little. It's not. What's next?
Your penny
what's
slot.
Next? Yeah. It's just what's next? What's next? Oh, Kanye. Yeah, you know. And I think actually, I don't know Kanye West, but sometimes when I see what he tweets up, I'm like, yeah, oh God, for heaven's sake, is that just to get attention?
Right.
You know, Bill Cosby is innocent, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't. And I was interesting because I watched.
Did you see that?
Of course I saw it. We talked about it on At Midnight last night.
Oh, my God.
And we were trying to, you know, I was trying to dissect all. And what's so funny with him is that you try to dissect all the ways, like, well, okay.
What's he up to?
Yeah. Is he saying, because obviously, you know, something just happened in the Cosby case and Janice Dickinson was trying to sue Marty Singer and the attorney. But then I guess that didn't go through. And so they're re-strategizing. So did Kanye read that as that Bill Cosby was innocent? And was he outraged? Like, Bill Cosby's innocent. Are you kidding me?
What that? Yeah.
But then there
is that how he talks? Hey!
But then there were no question marks. So I don't think that was it. Or was he just with his friends and he's like, I can get away with anything. Watch this.
Yeah.
You know, or was it? What? Because he didn't. And I.
However, in the eyes of the law, Bill Cosby is innocent.
So far, legally, yes. But yes, that is a difficult. That is a very indisputable fact. He has not been found guilty of anything.
Right.
Yet.
So now we must presume that he is innocent. The idea is, or certainly that the court must presume he is innocent until proven guilty. He's not even been charged with anything. Now, I personally think that he's guilty and he's a serial rapist.
Yes.
But legally...
Yeah, I mean, it is... Because even, you know...
Well, OJ's in jail for kidnapping.
That's
not
true.
Not for murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just... You know, because sometimes when we'll make jokes, Cosby jokes pop on Out Midnight, and people are saying, like, you're making light of the situation, and we're like, and I would say, no, as a comic, you know, I think the guy is a piece of shit. I can't punch him in the face. All we can do as comedians is ridicule him, so, because I think, I don't want people to forget. Like, people, this is what we can, one of the things that we can do as comedians.
I also, it's interesting you bring up that, oh, you're making light of the situation. Well, first of all, that's my job, is to make light of any situation. That's what I do. If you want someone to make dark of the situation, you go to a tragedian.
Right.
Right. You want someone who makes
stand-up tragedy.
Right. It's like, hey, everybody, it's a terrible day.
That's the news, basically.
Yeah, right.
The news is stand-up tragedy.
Well, but I think that the idea... Also, I think that there's a real good lie that goes around that many pseudo-intellectuals believe that misery has somehow got more intellectual value than joy.
Thank you for saying that.
And that's a real problem, because there's a lot of stupid people think because they're miserable, they're smarter than they
are. And negative.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I feel like I've been maybe silently shouting that to myself, but, you know, but when people, because look, I try to be as upbeat as possible. Sure. I'm not like this 100% of the time. I have my dark moments.
You surprise
me. I have doubts.
Me.
I have, you know, like I'm insecure. I think a lot of things I do suck, and I try to do them anyway. I beat myself up. I get too, you know, like, sometimes when I go home, I just get in my own head, and it's, you know, I try to remember that so I can be fair to my partner and future spouse. But in general, I try to choose positivity because I believe it's a choice. And sometimes I feel like people who are negative are like, but this guy's the real deal. The next, like, it's a choice. Negativity and positivity are a choice.
Also, in the portrayal of tragedy and comedy, I have tried to do both in my life, and I have watched many other people do it. It seems to me far easier to portray misery, either as an actor or as a writer, than it is to portray joy. Because joy is very difficult because there's much more resistance to it.
Of course.
And so there was a thing that Bill Carter, the New York Times, said to me when I took over the late night show. I'd said to him, what do you think I should do first? He said, well, the first thing you're going to have to do is ride out the fact that they are going to have to forgive you for trying to make them laugh. You're going to have to get past that. And it was interesting because that was my experience when I took it over, that it was, you know, the first couple of months were like, as it is for everybody. I remember when Jimmy Fallon took over, people were all over him. This is terrible, blah, blah, blah. If you look at Carson's reviews when he took over the late night, the Tonight Show, they were killing him. They always go after, you know,
people
this.
People are giving Trevor Noah shit now.
Right. It's like,
you just started.
It's ridiculous.
Well, it is weird hearing that accent talk about American politics.
It's not weird at all.
It's just odd.
I think that it is. The accent doesn't bother me because, for obvious reasons, I feel that there are many accents.
But John's worked. Oliver's worked.
Yeah, I think that's because it's easy to. The English accent makes things sound clever. That's another common mistake. it's like. Yes, today, and you're like Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when you get Alec Guinness to play him because, you know, you want to be a Jedi. That sounds good. That right. sounds like, you know, if it was like, hey, you won't be a Jedi. yeah! It doesn't feel the same way.
Do you think we should pour blue milk into our butts?
Yes, because you have a great accent.
Right, that's right.
That's
it's
wise.
Like, let's drive the General Lee over this bridge. Fly into the air.
How will the dukes get out of this one? The literal dukes.
The actual dukes.
The actual dukes get out of this one.
But I think that what happens is that certain, for me, the commenting on American politics in the American media, it would help your case if you were an American citizen. I think that that's it's not necessary. Of course, free speech is for everyone who's here. But I think that it would. It used to get my goat when who was that guy who took over from Larry King, the English guy?
Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan. I was going to say Pierce Brosnan, but that wasn't. No,
that would have been amazing. Yeah,
that would have been awesome, actually.
Yeah.
Or just keeping Larry King would have been even better.
But
he, you know, he was going on about, you know, how it felt very schoolmarmy to me. Like, oh, come on, we don't want to have this. And this guy's flying home to London every weekend. I don't know. I'm not that I'm saying Trevor is doing that. He's not. But I think that you have to be involved a little bit. Mm. And also, I wonder about the validity in this is that in an election year when the two front runners at this point are both extremes of a thought or at far ends, is that how much of it, you know, how much of what you say in the media is it seems to be a lot of, with the exception, of course, of Fox and the right-wing radios, I mean, I tend to skew liberal in my thought, but it is relentless in all of our media. We don't. There seems to be in political discussion, there is no discussion.
There's no discussion.
If you don't agree with me, you're wrong and a bad
American.
You're
worse than Hitler and you should die in a fire.
You're un-American, you don't agree with me, and therefore you want to destroy America.
Now, you're, as a history buff, do you see...
That doesn't mean I know everything about history, right? Because that, I don't want to be that.
But you do know. I mean, you...
I know bits. I know the bits I know, and I don't know the bits I don't know.
Do you think we're just repeating the same things over and over again in more complex ways? Or?
I think history is psychotherapy for the entire species of humanity. So what you do is, in any form of decent, as I understand psychotherapy, is you look at your past and see if you can establish patterns or areas where you make mistakes or areas that make you unhappy or where you feel you've gone wrong. So if you look at that as a species, you look at history, it's the same thing. Where did we as a species make mistakes? Did we go wrong? Where did things occur that we could have avoided had we seen a pattern emerging? So let's, for example, look at a country called Germany. 1930. They've been through a terrible war, a humiliating process of peace. They're economically disadvantaged, a lot of upset. And there is a lot of diverse political thought. Communists on one side, social democrats kind of stride in the middle, and then the fascists on the far side of the right, and they're beginning to rise up. Now, what happens is you have a joke candidate amongst all of that, the guy with the stupid hair and the odd moustache, who's like, everybody thinks, oh, this guy's an idiot. But there's some people who really are into what he's talking about.
You mean Charlie Chaplin?
Well, exactly so. And what happens is the left and the center left get into what seems to always happen to the left and the center left in current democracies, and current by I mean since the Enlightenment, is that they start infighting and create opportunities for extreme thought on the right to take advantage of that. Hitler, remember, did not seize power. He was voted into power and then took control after it. So what I'm saying is that if I were a member of the Democratic Party, which I am not, I'm a registered independent and I vote in Vermont, but if I were a member of the Democratic Party right now, I'd be starting to say, well, whoever we're going to put up, we better make sure we get behind this or we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. All of us.
Mm-hmm. It's such a crazy, weird time. Mm-hmm. There was a guy on Twitter said something to me last night. He was upset about something that happened on the show, and I talked to him about it. Because I do like to have conversations with people.
Right.
So I said, hey, let's talk about it. And we talked about it, and it was great. And we understood each other, and it was really nice. And he goes, yeah, you know, I'm so sorry. It's just such a weird time. 2016 is the year of no chill. And I go, dude, you need to put that on a shirt.
Yeah.
This is the year of no chill.
Look, any year that starts off with, you know, David Bowie and Alan Rickman dying, I'm like, what the fuck? It's not even the end of January.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what the... Bowie in particular, I was like, that was like personal. I really... For me, that was a...
Yeah, because, you know, Bowie... And, you know, maybe unfairly we put this on people who are merely human beings. Bowie was another Robin Williams type where you're like, that guy's immortal. He's always going to be there. He's bigger than life. He's not... You know, so not only do we feel bad because we feel like, oh, even a good guy like that can get taken out, but it also is so much a mirror to our own mortality where you're like, oh, I guess I don't really
this
feel
is not
safe
permanent.
At all.
Yeah.
This is, yeah.
Do you know one of the most moving and wonderful things I've seen in the media this year was Jim Carrey's remarks at the Golden Globes? Did you see that?
No. What did he say?
He was introducing something and he said, hi, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, hi, I'm Jim Carrey, two-time Golden Globe winner. When I look in the mirror, I see Jim Carrey, two-time Golden Globe winner. When I go to bed, I dream of being Jim Carrey, three-time Golden Globe winner. Because then that would fix me. Then the dark hole, the searching would be over, and I would have three Golden Globes. Then he said something along the lines, I'm joking, in a universe that's just so big that we wouldn't even be, you know, detectable under a microscope if it was the size of, you know, a planet. But this is important to us. To us. And I thought, you know, there was something about the way he delivered it. This is a man who went through a great deal of personal tragedy in the last, you know, 6 months.
Yeah.
he's very bright, and I worked with him briefly before, and I always liked him. But I just thought when he did that, I thought, you're onto something, my friend. Whatever you're doing for yourself, I like it. Good for you.
Well, you know, I think, first of all, it's very honest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not him just doing a gag for a laugh. Like he's, it's funny because it's a very authentic, you know, it kind of takes the power out of what he's basically saying, yeah, it's important. It's not the most important thing in the world. I'm broken. Ultimately it matters, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I think the day the day that I kind of realized what insignificant specks we are was very freeing, because then I felt like, you know, when people think the universe is out to get him, it's like, yeah, you're not that important.
Yeah,
you know, it's really good. And it's good to not be that important.
Not all about you, Chris.
It's not all about you.
I like, you know, in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when Zaphod Beeblebrox goes into the total perspective vortex, which destroys the minds of everybody who goes in it, and he goes into it and comes out and goes, that was cool. That's who I aspire to be. Zaphod Beeblebrox, like, yeah, I'm pretty important.
Always bring a towel.
Yeah,
the important thing is always bring a towel.
Bring a towel.
Are you are you caught up on Doctor Who at all? Are you watching Capaldi?
No, I'm not. I kind of haven't been. I've been off in other. I do that with Doctor Who. I caught Peter's first show because we're old friends. I wanted to see.
You were in a band.
We were in a band together. That's
right. In a fucking band.
That's right. Those were interesting times. You know, have you ever read? Who was the name of that lady who wrote The Time Traveler's Wife? Audrey.
Niffenegger?
Right. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you said it, not me. But she wrote a book called Her Fearful Symmetry, which is set in Highgate Cemetery. It's beautiful, but reminded me of my time with Peter after the band, because he used to live next to Kensal Green Cemetery in London, which is a giant Victorian cemetery, much like Highgate. And we used to walk around that place because we didn't have jobs or any money. And we would walk around there and we'd talk about things. And we'd talk about, you know, Doctor Who and all that kind of stuff. And it's so funny that, these years later that Peter should be the Doctor. It's such a surreal thing to have happen, because I just lived my life. But when, you know, now you look back at it and you go, that's quite interesting. You know, when I lived in the East Village in the early 80s and all that stuff that was going on there, which was just stuff that was going on. But, you know, I met Andy Warhol and Jean-Michel Basquiat in the 1980s outside a furniture store that was run by an English guy on Avenue B. You know, it's like... It's kind of weird that it's...
Things get elevated?
Yeah, it's an odd... It's a funny old game, life.
It is a weird thing because you just perceive things as happening from your point of view, and it doesn't really mean anything, and, oh, it's not interesting at all, and then something weird happens, and something elevates, and then it gets packaged and labeled, and it's like, oh, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Sort of the commerce of it, I guess. And it is odd.
It can be annoying. It can be annoying, too. I remember that was the thing that I had difficulty with in late night, was when they would say, you make you part of a gang. Like, you know, like, you're all a bunch of, like, the late night guys, like, you're One Direction or something. I wasn't comfortable with that. I didn't join that. But, you know, things get labeled, you know, and you get put into it.
Well, because everything needs to be bite-sized and digestible, and they have to put it
clickbait.
In the headline. It's
got
to be.
Everything's
clickbait. Life is clickbait. That's the secret of the universe, I think, is somehow, unfortunately, clickbait.
Everything's clickbait.
Did you feel like, at a certain point, did you really feel the craziness of it? I mean, can someone do a late night show for an extended period of time and not kind of lose their mind?
I think people can. I think people can. I don't think I could. But I lost my mind doing the show in a way which I think has worked out for me. There was a moment when I was doing it when really I think there honestly it was like a sudden change in altitude. It was the night we did the show about South Africa, and the only guest that night was Desmond Tutu, and who's Anglican, not Catholic.
Damn.
Okay. very similar rituals, though. But he was on the show, and through this long-range conversation, he said to me, I've talked about this before, but he said, "You are crazy," he said. And I said, "Well, you've talked to a lot of very, very crazy people. I'm kind of alarmed to hear you say that." He went, no, because he's talked to some very bad, crazy people in his life. He said, no, you are crazy in the way that we need. You must be crazier. Be as crazy as you want." And I thought, well, that's like, for me, that's like getting permission from God to be as crazy as you want. if there is a God, I feel that he would approve of Desmond Tutu.
He would approve that anointing.
Yeah. And so I think, okay, I'll take that as an endorsement. And I feel that there is some liberation of that. And there's absolutely no way I would have met Desmond Tutu without doing the late night show. I loved doing that show. I loved it, and I'm grateful that I did it. But I'm glad that I stopped doing it.
How did you manifest that of being crazier, like of going farther with it?
I think ultimately, you know, no longer doing the show. I think that led to that. But I think I stopped concerning myself about the very understandable opinions of everyone else involved in my performance. So, like, you should do more material about contemporary events. I'd be like, meh.
No.
I want to talk about ancient Egyptian libation rituals in reference to, you know, communion.
Can I ask you a sincere question about that? Were you resistant to it because you didn't want to? Or was there a control thing of like, yeah, don't fucking tell me what to do with my show?
Well, I don't think it was really... It was my show in the sense that I did it. But I don't think I was ever... I hope I was never arrogant enough to think that it was... It belonged to me in a sense that... You know, I'll give you an example. When I said I was going, someone well-meaning friend of mine said, "Oh, CBS are going to miss you. They're going to be sorry you go," which is a nice supportive thing to say. But I said, and I meant it, and I still do mean it, I said, "CBS will miss me the way, like, if the Radisson Hotel chain lost one of their piano players." It's not that big a deal to them. They'll be able to fill the position. And me as a piano player, I'll go on and find other pianos, and they'll be fine too. And I really don't.
But you have the heart of a. It seems like you know, like that punk rock musician that you were. I feel like I always thought, like, well, that's your heart, you know, like you like to fucking rattle things and break things up. And when things are just too smooth, you got to go, because it kind of drives you nuts a little bit. So,
well, it's not, I think comedically, it's not very interesting. You know, once upon a time, nothing happened. The end. Well, there's no fucking story there.
Right.
So I think the guy walks into a bar, no horse there, no barman. He orders a drink, sits down. Nobody says anything. That's not a joke. So, you know, stuff has to occur. And if it doesn't occur in the material, then it's up for me. You should make stuff occur. You know, if I'm in a performance and nothing is occurring, it is my job to make it occur. Something must happen. So I think for me, that's it. And being raised by passive aggressive Scottish people, so that you're always thinking that everybody disapproves of you all the time.
Or was it kind of the, all right, okay.
Oh, trousers, is it? Oh, aye. haircut.
But before you said my hair was too long. Well,
yeah, oh, yes. Well, okay.
That's
how you're going to approach it.
What did you, what went through your head the morning that you woke up after you were done with the show?
I had terrible jet lag, I remember, because that night, I did the last show, and I, as is my wont, I got immediately in a car and went to the airport and went to Scotland. And when I was there, I just thought, well, that was that then. And it was very weird for a little while. And I think I might have overreacted a bit. I went on this massive tour. Like, I toured like crazy. Because, excuse me, I thought, well, I'll never earn any more money, so I better, you know, go and tour and earn some money and do what I do. And then that was just silly. I got very tired of that towards the end of that as well. So how did it feel? A little weird, a little strange. Not all good and not all bad.
Mm-hmm.
Changes, transitions are difficult, I think, no matter what they are. And even if they are desired, they're still difficult. And I didn't and don't regret not doing the show anymore. But I had an adjustment period, which was a little uncomfortable for a few months. I'd be lying if I said that. Much as it was going into the show, it was uncomfortable for a few months, the idea of doing it every night. I mean, you now are in that world. You do a show, you know, you do a lot of shows. And how many shows do you do in a year?
Stand-up or television shows?
Television shows.
Well, there's probably 160 episodes of At Midnight.
Right.
This year there'll probably be like 40 Talking Deads, and then I did another show, and then stand-up. You know,
right,
like,
so
it's a lot of
shows.
That's
kind of the same schedule I was on. I was doing 220 late-night shows a year and all the stand-up that I could.
Fridays, yeah. You got Fridays in there, too.
Right, yeah.
And then, yeah, which is even harder to do stand-up because you got Fridays.
Right.
So you got to get somewhere. You could do a Saturday show, come back Sunday, come back
Well,
morning.
I started double-taping on Thursdays.
Yeah.
So that I could get out on Thursday night and do a show on Friday night.
How's your what are you talking about now in your stand-up?
You know, the usual, you know, observations, difficult childhood, you know, bodily functions. The staple of the vulgar lounge comedian, you know. You know, ancient Egyptian libation rituals, religion, hypocrisy. And I got a hemorrhoid, so that's about 10 minutes.
What? Did you
well,
name it?
It's gone now.
Oh. But,
yeah. They're like the wind. They come and they go.
And that hemorrhoid's like, somewhere that hemorrhoid's doing a podcast like, you know, Craig Ferguson said he'd miss me, but now I'm like a piano player at the Radisson. That's the accent your hemorrhoid would have.
That's right. My hemorrhoid was from the 1930s, actually. Hey, Mac.
Hey.
Say.
I'm going to plug that asshole up real good. See?
It's dark in here.
It'll hurt when you sit down. See? Huh? How about that?
How about those ancient Egyptians, everybody?
So what? With Join or Die, what part of your brain does that show satisfy?
It's for me, the Join or Die show is about as you say, it's a panel game. It's a panel show, not a panel game. It's a panel show, but I wanted to put together a discussion which was genuinely Socratic in its form, in that there was no real conclusion other than there was no real worth other than the discussion itself. So the structure of take six things, whittle them down to one. So what is the greatest, you know, shoe in history?
Taylor.
Right. Okay. So I said shoe.
Oh, we're just calling it a shoe?
Yeah. Well, I think it's arguably a snake. Look, that's not one of them. Anyway, but that's what happens, is the form. It's not like you win a prize. Like, we're doing a show. What did we do when you were on? What was that show?
It was the, I think it was Craziest Medical Devices.
Craziest Medical Advice. Yeah, that's right. The idea.
Advice.
Right.
Yeah. Leeches.
Leeches, bleeding,
right.
Taking your teeth out to stop you feeling anxious,
that's
all
right.
That stuff.
It's that, like drilling a hole in your brain to let the crazy out.
Well, that was in there. That was in it, yeah. But what happens is, and you know this, you start putting forward ideas that you don't necessarily believe, but they're amusing and stimulating to have in the conversation. And so, it exists in what you're doing right now. It is about something other than the individuals involved. It's just a conversation, but it's a conversation about a moment in history or a thing. Or what it's not about is the new sitcom on the WB.
Right.
There's not even a WB anymore, but you know what I mean. So I wanted to do that and structure of taking six things and whittling them down to one just was useful televisually. It has no value other than that. And, you know, it was interesting to me that, you know, the way things went, like in the show we did about the greatest founding father, which was very interesting because it became a discussion about not what we started off talking about, which it became a discussion about slavery. Because if you are going to say, as obviously the knee-jerk reaction is George Washington is the greatest founding father.
Well, it was Jefferson, but he's a slave.
No, he owned slaves too.
Yeah.
So it has to be John Adams, surely, because, you know, John Adams did not own slaves, knew that it was morally wrong. So then you ask, is there ever a point in human history where it is morally correct to own slaves? The answer, of course, is no, it is fucking not morally correct to ever own a slave. Now, was that unknown at that time? If it was unknown at that time, how the fuck did John Adams know about it? He knew it was morally abhorrent to own another human being and was very vocal about saying so. So the argument and the discussion became about the dark shadow, and I mean that in the metaphorical sense, the dark shadow of slavery in the birth of the United States. Because then you say, well, no empire was ever built on without slaves. And you go, but America was not an empire at the time of slavery. It was a collection of colonies and states, you know, and a country at war with itself over the morality and the, let's be honest, economics of slavery. So it became a discussion about something using the tools of clickbait. That's all.
Yeah, they're really great jumping off points for conversation,
right?
Because you're putting these. In our case, with the medical practices, the questionable medical practices throughout history, they're essentially, you kind of set them on the table and they have no value until we start talking about them.
Right.
And then you really start, the genius of the show is you really start getting to know people because you see their thought process and their deduction process,
right,
and why they think something is superior to something else really says a lot about who they are.
And see how much of human behavior is and human invention is trial and error. Like, there was a point in the Middle Ages when rubbing dog shit in your eyes apparently cured blindness. Now, I can understand doing it once. George has gone blind. Well, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
I don't know. Try dog shit in his eyes. Yeah. You know, and you know, the guy's like, well, guys, I still can't see, and the smell is awful. And they was like, well, do it again. It worked for George. But and then again, it didn't work. But you notice that in Hollywood, they'll remake movies that didn't work the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Because at least they made them before. it's so fucking crazy.
Not only that, but how many times it's such an odd business, and especially like when you kind of look at the network side of stuff where you go, how does some executives just fail upwards? Like, how many times does some, you know, I mean, it is kind of crazy. But then at the same time, when I look at how many failures I had in my career, I am pleased that that part actually worked in my favor. Because if you were kind of looking at my track record, you'd go, hey, there's a lot more that did not work than did work.
Well, it's baseball. It's, you know, how many do you have to hit to make the Hall of Fame? 1 in 10, right?
I don't know. 100?
You have to hit 3 in 10 usually.
Okay.
3 in 10? 3 in 10. So 70% of what you do is garbage.
Yep.
And you have to be okay with
and
that.
And you're a Hall of Famer.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, I mean, if you hit 1 in 10, you're just rich. And nobody knows who you are.
2.5 2.5 in 10, you're rich.
All right.
1 in 10, you're bouncing around. You're not doing well.
Okay. All right. Well,
if you got 100, they're
putting you back
down.
You know where I'm going with this. What I'm saying is there's more failure than not.
Well, I think I hope in general you feel okay.
I hope you
feel okay. I mean, and I don't just mean like that you feel marginally good by okay. I just mean okay. Like, I feel like we kind of strive for this. I want my default setting to be okay, where things can happen and I don't blow it out of proportion, or I don't make it something to beat myself up or tear something down. Like, I just want to feel okay with stuff.
I think that the key for me, and I think whenever, you know, we talked earlier on about, you know, when people are having difficulty with addictive problems, which we have both experienced in our own lives, how do you help out? And whenever I'm trying to help somebody that has difficulty, and anyone who's listening to this who's having difficulty or is in the early days or even further on in a struggle with sobriety, I would say try and treat yourself like you're a friend of yours that you like.
Yes.
So, like, if a friend of yours comes to you and says, I'm having a terrible time in this relationship, what would you do? take him out for a meal, maybe listen to his bullshit for a while, you know, say, come on, you're a great guy, she's just being horrible right now, or, you know, he's being horrible, or they're being horrible, or whatever you're in a relationship.
If you're in a plural relationship with several...
Yeah, I mean, what I think is if one tries to practice self-acceptance, treat yourself like you're somebody you like, and live in the present. I do believe that it's not easy to do, but I do believe that the meaning of life is to live each moment as it arrives. And if you can do that, then, you know, you win whatever can be won.
Yeah. I try to remind myself sometimes, I know I've said this on the podcast before, but learn from the past, plan for the future, live in the present.
Yeah, I think so. And then the Kratz brothers always say, see you on the creature trail. And I like that too.
Oh, that's...
I've got young children.
It's so adorable.
See you on the creature trail. Yes, Krat Brothers. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, my God. These guys are fucking onto something.
Yeah. See you on the creature trail. Yes.
I'm going to really take that to heart.
Yeah. Well, you know, whatever works.
Yeah.
But Frank Sinatra said that great thing, didn't he? When he said, I'm in favor of anything that gets you through the night, if it's a bottle of Jack Daniels or a Bible. Ever.
Yeah.
Whatever you need.
Are you going to be? Are you touring at the moment?
No. I've got a couple of dates in California just to make sure that my hole doesn't close.
Your comedy hole?
Yeah.
You don't want the comedy hole to close up too much.
No, you do not.
Because you really feel it.
Well, then when you try to open it up again, you know,
it
gets messy.
Well, I hope to see your comedy hole open again soon.
Oh,
and
it's
also.
Fine.
Yeah, so some other bits of business, but wedding invite coming your way.
Oh, I was going to ask about that, and I thought, is that gauche? Because I do want to see you dressed up and shaven.
I don't know if I'll totally shave.
Oh, no, dude, you
really
have to shave.
I'm too pasty. No. I don't have a good...
Get the...
You got to shave. I shave.
You have to shave.
I shaved for my wedding.
Yeah, you know, you have... And I mean shave your entire body.
My body, down
I'm talking eyebrows.
Dolphin smooth.
Pubic hair.
Yeah.
Ass hair.
I'm
going to
get a full wax.
Yeah, everything.
I'm going to get a face wax.
You should
wax
look like a giant baby.
I should
look like... big day.
I should look like a wetsuit. In a bow tie,
a young dolphin,
just an adorable, yep. Just like they, I was just dragged out of the sea.
I think it'd be lovely.
Do you take this woman? Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna do it. It's gonna be good though. The ceremony's gonna be good. Lydia's super cool about it. She's like,
is it gonna be somewhere really cool?
Yeah, we're doing it locally. I mean, right. This is gonna be at a
Disney.
I wish we could.
They're getting married in Space Mountain.
Nah, we're just getting married at a nice
You're just getting married
place.
Properly like humans. It's
like
not
human
like,
beings, yeah.
Right,
but
good.
You know,
it's not like a Doctor Who themed wedding or anything like that.
Well,
oh
just
man.
Hang on a second,
oh, now,
Craig.
Now look, Craig, I wanna tell you something.
Hang on.
Just, look, I far be it from me to give you any marital advice. But
wasn't my idea, by the way.
All right. Well let me just
Wait,
say
what?
This.
What?
You know the movie Chariots of Fire?
I'm aware of it.
All right. You know that's a great movie?
Great movie.
But that soundtrack...
Vangelis.
When you listen to it now, you're like, why is someone playing a fucking keytar over this great movie? Had they put on a traditional soundtrack with a score, that movie would... Yeah, but if they had the... But if that... Even the same music, but just played orchestral score, a classic look, it would have stood the test of time. All I'm saying is this, if you really want to be mocked by your children, you get yourself arriving in a fucking TARDIS.
You know,
my wife wouldn't even let me wear a white dinner jacket at the reception.
For James Bond? First of all,
your wife is right.
Thank you for the wedding march idea that you've given me, which is Chariots of Fire theme.
All right, okay.
But the other thing is that, it's not going to be super Doctor Who themed. Lydia just said, I found this really awesome, and this was totally her idea. So I found this really awesome cake. The front of the wedding cake's a regular wedding cake. The back is basically all these Marvel heroes stacked on top of one another. She was like, we should do the same thing with a TARDIS. So the front of the cake will look like a traditional cake, and then the back is just the front of the TARDIS. And who am I to deny my future wife?
Well, you know what? You're marrying the right woman, clearly.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
She also wants to have zombie bartenders.
So, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything. Listen, I've been married before, more than once, and we always had zombie bar.
Zombie bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Very short ceremony. She wants to do a really short ceremony. Like,
yeah. Are you religious at all?
I'm not. Right. She's not really either, and so there's not going to be a religious ceremony.
No clergyman or anything.
I don't think there's going to be any clergyman. I know. You know, if it were up to my mom, I would have a big Catholic wedding.
And your mom is worryingly attractive, by the way. Was that difficult? Growing up, I think that must have been.
I mean, I never popped a boner to my mom.
No, I didn't mean that. No, you misunderstand.
No one asked you that.
That's not what I meant.
Oh man,
that's not what I meant. But as we're on the subject. No, I meant, you know, if you're the kid with the hot mom and the other kids, or I don't know.
I just never.
You weren't aware then. You weren't aware.
When I think about both of my parents, I think they were both attractive people. Like my dad had this very kind of tall Elvis.
Yeah, I've seen photographs of your dad.
He kind of had this Elvisy vibe.
Very interesting character.
You know, and so I don't know. I mean. My mom is single. If there's a fella out there, I'd be all in support of.
Well, would you though?
Of course I would.
Would you?
Yeah.
I mean, what criteria would you have for a stepfather at this point?
I could give you joke answers. My sincerest answer is just someone my mom likes.
Well, I think that's good
because my mom
have an evolved relationship with your mother. That's
great. We're very close. I would say my mom is one of my best friends.
Right. Okay. And that's getting a bit too much.
No. But I mean, someone that I can call, and right. I fear no judgment, and I can talk to her about anything, and I trust her opinion.
Wow, that's great.
I didn't always because I was younger and I thought I knew everything.
Well,
but
that would be weird if you did.
But I feel my mom to be very wise and very caring, and also. I respect the hell out of her because she just doesn't. She's a very sweet little Italian lady, but she does not take shit from people. And that does not mean that she puts a finger in someone's chest and like, no, fuck you. Right. She just, if someone's being unreasonable, she just kind of laughs and walks away. Like, she just doesn't need anything from anyone. And I find that to be incredibly admirable.
That is good.
So, yeah.
Does your fiance get on with your mom?
They love each other.
Do they really?
They love each other. And my mom. You know, and my mom was the first person that was like, she's a really solid human being and you should really give this a shot. And I was like, I know I feel that way, but she's so calm. I feel like there's a shoe that's going
to
drop.
I must have been the second person then to say that.
Well, that's the interesting thing. I mean, you know, right now the love's bloom is on, it's all good. But I guess you have to think about what's going to be like, you know, when you have kids and you're up all night.
I mean, I don't think I don't stress about that stuff. But I also, exactly like what you said, I want to live in the present.
Yeah, well, there is that.
I mean,
good for you,
Craig, they're Hearst. They're going to have a night nurse.
All right.
She's not getting up to feed that baby.
Hey, listen.
They're going to have.
Let me just tell you this. Let me tell you this right now. Having gone through, you know, two young children, you know, raising them, that anyone that does it without help is to be admired greatly. Raising kids is I'm telling you, if you looked at it, raising kids without help would really be against the Geneva Convention because the sleep deprivation alone is unbelievable. It is unbelievable what it does to your mind. If you can have someone that you can say, hey, will you take someone you trust to take your baby for 4 or 5 hours while you just get some sleep, I'm telling you, my words will come back. Like Chris Rock's words came back to me. Like when you're up in the middle of the night, it'll be my voice in the montage going, get some help. Get some help. Get yourself somebody to look after the baby. And at that point, I will appear dressed as Mary Poppins, arriving by umbrella. Oh, let me help you out there with the magical wee. Oh.
Greg, your beard and the dress are weird.
No, it's not. That's judgmental. We don't do that anymore. The beard and the dress. The beard and the dress are totally acceptable and not to be in any way mocked.
The beard in that particular dress.
No, okay. They don't.
That's what I meant. Yes, yes.
Yeah, you can box someone dress from much. A choice of dress, but not wearing a
That's
dress.
That's exactly right. Okay. The Mary Poppins dress is what I'm talking about.
All right, then.
So in short, Join or Die, February 18th, History Channel. What time?
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock right. on the History Channel.
Eastern time. And now, when I say Eastern, I mean Far Eastern. It's 11 o'clock in Hong Kong.
Why is Craig Ferguson telling everyone that it's airing in early
so
Hong Kong?
It is at 11 a.m. Eastern.
Why? Don't do that. People will think it's on in Hong Kong at 11 o'clock. Well, maybe it should be.
Craig's a comedian.
What's that?
Oh, it's a guy. It's a guy.
Sometimes, David Cross said something fantastic in a stand-up special I saw once, or some piece of stand-up I saw him do. Where he said something and somebody kind of heckled him, saying, "That's not true." And he said, "I'm a comedian, and sometimes I say things that are not true for the purposes of humor. It's a joke." By the way, have you watched Better Call Saul?
Oh, yes, of course
oh
I have.
Oh, my God, how great is that?
It's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, Odenkirk is like off the charts.
We're going to do a little after show for it for the premiere and the finale.
I think Michael McKean and Bob Odenkirk, my God.
Stunning together.
Unbelievable.
Vince Gilligan has this incredible way of identifying people with the comic who are kind of comic in nature
right.
and going, you have the skill set to do this.
Yeah, I think that's because he did the same with Bryan Cranston.
That's right.
Malcolm in the Middle to Breaking Bad.
Well, there were a lot of people on Breaking Bad who were comedy people you know, like Lavelle Crawford and Bill Burr and, you know, people like that.
And I think the thing about that is that that's smart because any comedian that I know that I like, whether professionally or personally, and probably it's usually the same thing because it's hard to, you know, it's hard to like someone if you don't like them professionally. Right. They all possess a darkness and a desperation.
Yeah.
All of them. Yeah. All of them.
Because comedy is a defense mechanism from dealing with all the fucking bullshit that you put yourself through.
Absolutely.
So don't put yourself through bullshit unless you're a comedian and you feel like it serves your comedic purposes, and by all means. But most importantly, I never got a boner to my hot mom.
Yeah.
Right. No one asked.
But I'm just saying.
Freeze frame.
Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.